If you are enjoying the Unpublished podcast, I, Amy McNee, have started a YouTube channel. This is a space where I really want to take care of creators and really foster an attitude of how do we become masters of our craft. Like, I want this space to be there for our creatives who really want to take themselves to the next level. So Inspired to Write is the YouTube channel name, and I'm so grateful for your support as I kind of grow this channel from the ground up. It's very new, it's only a little baby, and I'm really, really grateful to see you there and to have you like and subscribe. I hope you enjoy today's episode, guys.
The Unpublished Podcast with Amy and James.
Hello, creatives. Welcome to another episode of the Unpublished Podcast. My name is Amy.
And I am James. I'm bored of our intro. I wanted to do something new.
It's just, that's the information you really got to give at the beginning, I feel.
I know. I just, like, there's no pizzazz to our intro anymore.
All right, we can shake it up. It
just feels stale.
Okay, I understand. We all think of something new.
Okay, cool. Nice.
Today we are talking about...
You've forgotten? We're talking about how artists... This is a harsh way of saying it, and it's not exactly what I mean, but this is the idea that came to my head, how artists are committed to their pain. And of course, like, so many of us are genuinely in pain, and so many of us, it's not our fault that we're in pain. So many of us, there are systems that are putting us into pain. And I'm not talking about purely physical or purely emotional pain. I'm not talking about, you know, artists who are genuinely disabled or artists who...
We're not talking about anything in specific.
No, exactly. I'm talking about how there's an attitude in the artistic community that the best artists are the artists in the most pain, and that you lose something if you try and heal yourself from pain in some way, or if you, and this extends to, you know, being afraid of success as well, because the artists go, well, if I lose, you know, suddenly I mean
suffering.
If I lose the kind of striving and the grinding and the psychological pain of my, of no one noticing or seeing my art, then my art will get worse.
Yeah, that's a huge fear for so many creatives.
Yeah, or that, you know, it's like the first album of the band. Everyone thinks, oh, you know, when that album or that artist, when they first released something, that's because they were living a normal life and they had normal pains and normal concerns. And so that was their best album. And their second album sucked because
everything, you know, got suddenly too easy they were rich.
And, yeah. And of course, like, that may happen sometimes, of course. But I think that a problem with this whole issue is that it becomes really prevalent in our minds when we see Van Gogh or something, you know, an artist who has incredible mental health battles and an artist who clearly was struggling. And we think that's why Van Gogh made the best art that Van Gogh made.
Yeah, because he was in pain.
And it's sort of just like, it's correlation, not causation. And it's also ignoring the fact that there are plenty of artists out there who are not in pain, who also make great art. Like, there's not, you don't have to be either way. Like, there's no better way.
Yeah.
It's not better to be in pain to make art.
Yeah. Thanks for kicking this conversation off with a great little tirade.
Pleasure.
So this, we're bringing this conversation to the table today after I made a post that said, why don't I prep for these things? It said...
You can't create in survival mode.
That's the one that triggered people.
Yeah.
You can't create in survival mode. And it had an incredible amount of conversation in it, and it was really divisive. Some people were like, this is so important for me to hear, and this is something I've been struggling with so much. And some people were like, most people who disagreed were polite and said, I really disagree with this. I believe that my dysregulation, my pain is something that serves my art, and that my art serves it too. And then there were people that were like, only true artists create with pain. True artists create dysregulated. Only good art is made through dysregulation.
I mean, that's the response I really hated. This idea that you have to seek pain. You have to put yourself in pain. You have to always be choosing. Basically, you have to be always deliberately choosing the hardest form of life if you ever want to be a great artist.
Yeah, it's crap.
People aren't even willing to give examples here. Or, you know, and even if you did give an example, as I was saying earlier, even if you picked one artist who really did make art from great pain, it's like, well, what about all the ones who didn't?
Yeah.
You know, and what about all the ones that didn't? And so what if, you know, maybe you think that the best art has been made from pain, but that is so subjective as well.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And I think so to mirror what you were saying and what I've written in my notes is huge respect to the majority of people who said, you don't know, you don't understand, Amy, my art heals my pain.
Yeah.
And art is something that stops me from being dysregulated.
Yeah. And I think that that's what my post really missed out on.
Yeah.
So I would love to give some context. Is that okay? Or do you want to go take
course,
it to a place?
Of course, no, of course.
So I have a very dysregulated nervous system. I suffer from anxiety and I have OCD. I am very regularly in a state of fight, flight, freeze or fawn. And I experience them all. And we are working on that. Me, my beautiful therapist, Helen, and James, he's along for the ride, even though he didn't really get to consent to it. And I was sitting in a therapy session with Helen and I was just like on the verge of tears, completely activated. Any noise around me would give me a fright. Like I was not in a good way. I was super, super dysregulated. And Helen said, you cannot work like this. And when she said that, I was like, yeah, like this is a joke. Like trying to write particularly long novels when I am that dysregulated, when a sound will throw me and everything, like my clothes feel like they're like trying to attack me, like I'm so sensorily dysregulated. How can I create in that space? And I wrote it down when she said it. And then I really thought about it and I thought about how hard it is for artists who are moving through stages of, you know, real dysregulation to create. And so that was where that post came from.
And we're talking about acute dysregulation, not yes. like not my like, life is stressful or no. I have things in my life that I, you know, that are damaging or the or
I was really talking about it in like the somatic central nervous system state. Like I was so fucking wired and I really like I can force myself to try and create in that state, but it's not very productive and it's really hard and it only makes me more dysregulated.
And from my perspective, having now been dated you and been married to you for 14 years, I know when this is happening for you, and without ever having language around it, you know, for a long, long time, and before we even knew that you had OCD and an anxiety disorder, I was very aware of, oh no, Amy's pushed herself too far.
Like, yeah,
Amy is out at the moment, and we need to do bring something. Back. Like we need to bring her back. We need to we need to give her space. We need to, and you would often try and push through. And then make things worse.
Yes.
And then it would prolong your heightened acute state of anxiety.
Exactly.
And it would be ultimately so much worse than if you just let yourself regulate.
Just regulate, yeah.
Which is obviously easier said than done.
Hugely. And I really respect people who came and said, you know, my art helps me regulate, which I think is really valid. And again, not something that I was thinking when I wrote that. I think for a lot of people, it doesn't.
I'm in the camp of it helps me.
Regulate?
Yeah. I am prone to short but acute depressive episodes. Probably happens to me a couple times a year, and it almost always coincides with a lack of artistic expression.
Yeah.
And I feel like art, and it's like my routine has been disrupted in some way that stops me from doing something creative and meaningful with my days. And then once I can get back into that routine, maybe it's to do with routine as well, but I definitely often feel like a writing session will in some way
regulate you.
Regulate me. Yeah. It will regulate me. It won't cure anything, but it will regulate me and maybe help me feel better. And enough of them in a row do help me to come back to myself.
Yeah. I think basically this conversation is so big. And also I think we're looking into kind of things that are only on the verge of like research right now. We're only really just understanding the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. Like we're still, this is a fresh conversation for therapists, for scientists, for regular humans. So maybe we just didn't have the language for it for a long time. And also I feel like I made a very short post.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't run it by James, and I know if I ran it by James, James would have said, maybe you want to add a little bit of nuance there.
It's hard. I mean, the thing is, obviously, in social media, anything you post nowadays, your account is big enough that someone is going to come on and say something.
Yeah.
But that's just something that we can't really avoid at this stage. But at the same time, you know...
Yeah,
okay.
Do you have something really
urgent? No.
I still thought, even though I was really interested and engaged in a lot of these reactions, I still thought, how interesting that so many people leapt to the defense of their pain. Yes. And it was, again, like so many points were made and are very valid, but so many people were like, no, like defensive. Get away from my pain is crucial.
And of course, I can understand if you have a long history with mental illness, if you find it extremely hard to not be in, you know, to find yourself to be mentally healthy, then I can understand why reading Amy's post, you would be like, well, she's saying I'll never be an artist.
I can't create art, yeah.
And that's obviously not what you're saying at all. And I can understand why you would have a very strong negative reaction to that, because of course you can create art if you're one of those people. Of course you can.
Mm.
And you're not
lost to the art world.
Of course not. It's really not what I was trying to say.
It is hard. It was like 20 words on Instagram, and then people really took it around.
I mean, in that way, I did fuck it. Like, it's just, it was too impulsive. Yeah. But it's because I was so impacted by it, what Helen had said that morning. And I was like, why do I keep trying to work, to create in these states? But yeah, I should have thought it through.
It's just weird nowadays for us because Amy's only really blown up on Instagram lately. And before, we had a lot of people in the community who really understood us, and we felt like we were talking to the friends, same people and friends all over and over again. And now it's like, really, there are so many new people that you can say one thing and people don't have all the context and they don't have the history, and they think they don't understand where Amy's coming from. And suddenly it's like 200,000 extra people or something who are like, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
And then it's easier to be misinterpreted. Or not misinterpreted, it's easier to... We didn't feel like probably we had to provide as much nuance in the past, and now it's like, okay, maybe we do, but it's
but
so hard to do.
Also, we've always felt, I feel like it's a little unfair, like we've always tried and strived so hard to create nuanced conversations, and I just slipped up a little bit. But also, it just created a good conversation.
I mean, also don't think you slipped up. I think it's people will always interpret things in a myriad of different ways.
Yeah.
A plethora, as you would like to say. We have an ongoing debate. I have a crusade against the word plethora, and Amy loves the word plethora.
Plethora and alchemize.
And alchemize, yeah.
I want to save all the notes you have put on my manuscript.
Whenever Amy does any nonfiction project, I often come through and do the first pass edit immediately. And these are just the things I often pick up. And it's not really fair of me, but I start bullying her a little bit about it.
It's mild bullying.
It is mild bullying.
Lucky I know myself. I know I'm a brilliant writer.
You got to have someone there. It's like in the Roman triumph, the slave who would stand behind the general and say, remember that you're but a man.
Really? You know, that happened?
Yeah, I'm just trying to remind you that
you're
a human.
You keep me grounded.
Exactly.
Literally the other day, James sent me a text and said, I think you've lost touch with the common man, basically.
I didn't exactly say that. That was the gist of it.
It was. I was like, Jesus.
It was on a creative topic that we were brainstorming together. And Amy's take, I thought, was removed from the common person. And I told
her. Anyway, James grounds me and is mean to me.
I think it's interesting because I'm not as successful as you. I'm the support player. So I don't feel like I feel like I can be that role to you.
Mm.
Like I don't, you're kind of famous. I'm not famous.
Mm.
Or at least I'm maybe 1/10 as famous as you. Mm. So I kind of feel like I could trail behind and be like, wait a minute, what are you doing there?
Mm. No, I do appreciate it, even though I like to pick on you about it. You like to pick on me.
I do. We have been derailed a little bit.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, back to pain. What were some of your notes that you had?
I didn't have that many notes. It was more just like, I really wanted to emphasize this idea that you're allowed to find art easy.
Mm.
You are allowed to. And I know it won't, and often won't be easy, but like it can just be work. It can just be something that you do with your day that's like...
That's nice.
That's nice. It's, it doesn't have to be this like huge grinding pain cave thing.
Yeah.
And things aren't more valid because they've come from a painful place.
And I think this idea that art is more valid if it comes from pain comes from like a lot of like industrialist capitalist narratives about pain and work. And yeah. I would love to talk about a bit about that and look at Graeber a little bit.
Yeah,
of course. Would you have the capacity?
Yeah, let me just go into my mind palace and recall a book I read 5 years ago.
Yeah, but it's like the book.
Yeah, so Graeber would argue that we don't want to allow people who do something that we perceive as society as that we perceive as fun, like writing or meaningful, for example, nursing or teaching.
Yeah.
We do not want to allow these people who do these jobs to
be rewarded.
Be rewarded, essentially. And so artists, you know, the way artists often claw that back is they try and go, well, you don't understand. I was in so much pain when I was doing this.
Yeah.
We try and validate. This is really hard and this sucks.
Yeah.
And this is, I think that it's almost a signal or like a dog whistle to capitalism to say, no, I'm okay. Like, I can deserve the reward because I really struggled with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the same way that an investment banker might put in a 100-hour week so they can go, at least I put in a 100-hour week, so I justified my $1 million bonus.
Yeah.
I think artists go, their 100-hour week is the immense emotional pain that they say they go through.
Yeah. Definitely.
I mean, that's extremely simplistic and...
Yeah, but that was what I was doing. Like, I believed that if I was in pain, then I deserved to be an artist. And yeah, it is it's inherited from our culture, and it's so wrong.
Yes.
And this idea that we could both be delighted, joyful mentally, while people who create is just, it's too good, and most of us just don't believe we deserve it.
Mm.
And society has taught us that we don't deserve it, that if we're going to do something as fun as making art and something as meaningful as making art, then we need to be financially punished for it and looked down upon.
And we should not only be financially punished for it, we should be mentally punished for
mentally
it.
Mentally punished for it,
so
yeah,
it should be basically just a bad thing to do.
Yeah, you need to
make
it bad.
It should be an unenjoyable bad thing to do.
And we reward, the other side of this story that Graeber talks about is that we reward like middle management and all of these like kind of meaningless jobs. We compensate meaningless jobs with money.
Yes.
Which I just think is so interesting.
Yeah. It's obviously completely different subjectively and qualitatively, because those people do kind of, if you're in middle management, you are probably paying psychologically
yes.
for what you're doing. So you yeah. probably are. I mean, there is some kind of twisted transaction happening there.
Yeah.
But it's just the fact that artists are trying to go, but often like think they have to go both ways. It's like, if I'm getting rewarded financially, I have to be mentally punished.
Yeah.
Or if I'm being,
if I'm happy,
then I can't be rewarded financially, yeah. et cetera. There are all sorts of feedback loops and complications.
Really, really gross. And we have to be able to look at them and understand what's going on for us.
Yes.
Because I think we have artists who are absolutely 100% committed to being in pain and are in pain their whole entire lives because they believe that comes hand in hand with being an artist.
And then it makes them more pure, or it makes what they're doing more worthwhile or meaningful. Or, I mean, I'm just trying, once again, I'm so sorry to bring up my dad, Brandon Sanderson.
Oh my god, I thought you were going to bring up your actual dad. No. I was like, ooh.
I don't think Ron's had it.
I don't think Ron's had anything yet
on the podcast yet. We'll get to, but interestingly, my dad revealed to me the other
your real
day,
dad,
my real dad, that he had wrote a science fiction novel when he was a teenager, and I was so curious, but he hasn't really said anything more about it to me. I would love to see him. He's almost retired now. He's doing his master's in philosophy as a sort of retirement gift to himself, but I would love to see him write a novel as well. I think it would be so interesting.
My god, can you imagine?
Yeah.
But, I want to talk about your dad.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like the two things you've said about him, like, do not paint a picture of who he is at all, which is so interesting. Like, he wrote a fantasy novel and now he's doing his master's in philosophy. Like, I imagine someone quite different to your father when you say that.
I know, right? That's so interesting. He has many layers.
He has many layers.
Many, many layers.
Ron.
I'm not going to psychoanalyze my dad on this podcast.
Okay, cool. Your fake dad.
My mum will listen to it and then pass it on to him anyway, so.
Great. Thanks, Nikki.
Thanks, Nikki. And what I was saying was my other dad, Brandon Sanderson, is clearly just like a very steady personality.
He's so even keeled, and I love it.
I mean, he's even said that he basically, I think he has, what's the opposite of anhedonia? Like, he almost has like a inability to feel negative emotion or something. He's talked about I'm going to misquote him on that, but he has essentially the opposite of pain. He kind of just
is
like
he
a
just
regular,
like good.
He's just like a regular middle class person doing a job he likes, pumping out books.
Yeah,
I think that's really cool.
I know, it's lovely, and I think that's what a life that we are aspiring to and living is, a life where it's like, yeah, some days I feel a bit shit, and some days I feel like pretty fucking good, but most of the time I'm just joyful and grateful that I get to do writing for a living. And we wake up, we write our books, and we smile at each other, and we say, our life is really fucking great, and then we go to bed. I might have some sort of dysregulation situation, but we work through it.
I guess I agree. Yes, that's what we're aspiring to. I was sort of put off a little bit there by me suggesting Brandon Sanderson's middle class. He's he's probably worth, you know, it's worth tens of millions of dollars.
Oh,
now,
you got distracted by the fact that you said that.
I said he's not really, I mean, he was once, and I don't know. I can't imagine that.
Yeah,
that's
not
the sort of lifestyle
class
he lives.
Yeah.
But all credit to him. You know, he deserves it. I think that what I was going to say was, what are we doing art for? Maybe I'm just misunderstanding why other people do art. Like, I'm doing art to be fulfilled and feel good and feel at ease and like I'm doing something meaningful with my life. And I'm doing art to feel better about myself. I am.
This kind of comes back to the question about why.
Yeah.
I hate to admit it, but I did go on a little Simon Sinek.
Your arch nemesis.
My arch nemesis, Simon Sinek. I have quite a few arch nemesises.
Why is he your arch nemesis?
I don't like his attitude.
You don't like that YouTube video where he bags out millennials.
I don't.
That's the, your main thing.
I think he's really, he can make really big statements about like groups of people, which are just like really useless, I mean, and
it's,
annoying.
It's so dumb, isn't it? To say all millennials are like this, all boomers are like this, all Gen Xers are like this.
Don't be like it's that. Just, you
know, millennials don't want to work. I mean, that's the one that pisses me off the
most. And that's what he says. Yeah, it's like, and I don't like it. Off.
Come on.
Anyway, so that's why I apologize for it, because I'm, he's my arch nemesis because of his bold statements that he's made, even though I'm sure. I doubt he even believes it.
I know, he says a lot of interesting things as well. It's just hard to get past the millennial bash.
Anyway, because I wanted to get back down to this question of like, why? Why do we do this? And like, he has obviously so much rhetoric and work around our whys, and it sits underneath everything we do. So it's not just a why am I doing this business or why I'm an artist. It's like, it sits under everything. And me and James really had to think about it. And I think this is the question. But for me, I think, I mean, I haven't done a huge amount of thinking about it, but I thought about it a little bit, and my why was I want to be seen and to make other people feel seen.
And mine was I want to delight.
Yeah, delight and be delighted, which is so beautiful.
I guess some people, and you know, if this is your attitude, I guess respect that some people want to say. some people's attitude is I want to create the best art I can do no matter what and no matter how I feel about myself.
I don't like that why.
Yeah.
It's not a good why.
Yeah.
Simon says, oh, it's okay.
It's okay. It's just the screensaver just came on and Amy thought the recording
out.
Stopped.
I freaked out.
Never put Amy in charge of the mics.
Should have learned that. He talks about how the way that you find a why is often by talking to a friend and saying, why do you like to be with me? And then they'll be like, oh, you know, you're good fun, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, no. Like, why do you prefer to be with me over someone else? And you dig and you dig and you dig into the question. And it can't be like a really close personal relationship. It has to be like you and like a good friend. And apparently it's a really useful tool for looking at like what kind of magic you give to spaces you're in.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Really interesting.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
I thought we could do more work on that.
Oh, a huge amount more work.
Because, and part of the reason why you want to find your why as well is that there's a lot of evidence that the easiest way to overcome procrastination is by having purpose and meaning behind what you're doing.
Mm.
And that, I mean, we talk about this a lot. If you read Amy's procrastination ebook, then she'll talk about this as well. It's like, we don't procrastinate because we're lazy. We procrastinate because essentially we don't have a good purpose and why. We haven't done the internal work essentially to be able to face our art confidently without pain. We're essentially running from pain.
Yeah, we're afraid.
And having a good why is a good way to counteract that often. So that can be a powerful tool.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we have a lot more work to do that. I had something to say, but then it flew out my brain.
That is so unlike us. You know, Spotify was telling me that 73% of our listeners are new this year. And like, so many of the jokes we make, I feel you wouldn't get.
We're not making like cracking like 3-year-old jokes.
No, I feel like there's a lot of deep lore in the podcast. Especially around the audio quality and the rambling.
Welcome, 73% new listeners. I'm so grateful for your presence here.
Yeah.
And I hope that you understand what's going on.
I'm grateful too. I also had something good to say. So it's great that we both forgot. I love that about us.
Have you forgotten?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Why is it so hard to do a podcast? I guess the thing is, it's so hard to do an unorganized podcast. But also, we would never do the podcast if we were organized.
No.
So
we wouldn't be ourselves if we were organized.
So pain.
Pain.
Simon Sinek, oh, I know. Wise. Oh, good.
Okay. Pain is a non-renewable resource for art.
Mm.
It's just not sustainable. And actually, it may be renewable, but it's not sustainable in that it's too energetically draining. I think it decreases your quality of life. Like, you can keep creating pain for yourself and use it as fuel for your art, but I just feel like it is, you are just going to crumble, and it's not fair, and you can do it another way. Like, why are we using this energy resource when there's another joyful, delightful way that we can create?
Would you say it's like the dark side of the Force?
Oh my God, it's like you are being Sith Lord.
You can get really, the whole thing about the dark side of the Force in Star Wars is that you can use it really easily. You just got to get angry, and you can suddenly use all this space magic. But if you go on the light side of the Force, like, you have to meditate and you have to spend all this time like getting to know yourself and becoming at peace with yourself. It just takes fucking ages. So it's really easy to become a powerful Sith Lord. It's really hard to become a powerful Jedi Master.
I actually think this is the perfect analogy.
Okay, cool.
I like it a lot. Can you dip into Sith?
Well, sometimes Jedis do.
But yeah, because I think that like if we are in pain, which we will all experience pain in our life, like using our art to alchemize that pain into art, like it's a beautiful thing to do.
And
it's just constantly doing it. It's not useful.
I mean, I think the interesting thing about Star Wars is it's essentially the Jedi Order is just as fucked as the Sith Order in some ways because they're so rigid. They're like a, they should allow people to dip into the
hello
dark side of the Force more often, or they should let people be a bit more gray, but they're so rigid and that's their downfall. They're so rigid they can't see beyond their own programs and their own systems. Like they're too ordered. They're not chaotic enough. So they should have a little bit more chaos.
I like that.
Rather than stamping. And then they end up stamping down all their Jedis and those Jedis become Siths. Sorry about this rant, everyone.
They need some nuance.
They're like, don't worry about that. They don't use the dark side of the Force. Don't use the dark side of the Force because you might become a Sith. And then they push them down and push them down. And then suddenly people just explode into Siths.
That's crazy, James.
And I feel like that happens in art.
I agree. Great.
So maybe you can. Of course, if you have. You know, make art from your genuine lived experience. And
yes, please.
And of course, many of us have pain in our genuine lived experience.
Yeah.
All of us do. And of course, you are allowed to use that. I'm not going to say.
Yeah.
Of course, you can do whatever you fucking want, obviously.
I mean, don't listen to it. What the fuck are we doing? Like, why are we even here? Shut up.
Exactly. And if you want to create, if you need to create from pain, if it helps you create from pain, if you have found a really rich vein of pain that you can feel like you can touch and you can mine and you can do it safely. Totally. But if you have to keep digging up trauma, if you have to keep exposing yourself to trauma just because you think that's the only way you can be a proper artist, then you don't have to.
I used to get really worried that if I became a successful writer, that I wouldn't have anything good to share on my social media because my social media platform was built on the fact that I was really struggling as a writer and I wanted to be a writer. And I built my platform on the fact that it was fucking rough. I was like sitting, you know, with so many rejection letters. I was so heartbroken so much of the time. I was so fucking depressed. And I was like, well, what? Like people were connecting with me because they saw my pain in them. And I was like, well, if I become successful and as I have been becoming more successful, like what will happen? And what do you think has happened?
I think there are new problems or like new things to deal with, yeah. I think.
I think I'm better.
Yeah, I think you are a bit as well. Because...
Don't say a bit. What do you mean? I'm a bit better.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought I was complimenting you, but apparently I wasn't.
Do you think I've gotten... I'm a better teacher because I've taught more now. But like, I feel like just because I'm joyful and I'm in a better place and I'm not as depressed, like I still get to share from, and sharing from the light hasn't diminished my work.
I 100% agree. Sorry, I do, because just thinking about watching you try to write your first book, completely dysregulated, depressed, hating your life, took you 6 years.
Mm.
Bam. I know that you were still in pain when you wrote Elizabeth.
Yeah.
When you wrote The Rules Upheld by No One, but it was, you were starting to work through things.
Yeah.
And it was like almost, it was that alchemization,
yeah,
to use an Amy word,
hey,
of your pain.
Yeah.
It was more of a working through than a sitting in.
Yes. Thank you. That's a lovely way of
saying
that.
And since then, as you've journaled more, as you've, you know, done more therapy, as you've worked through your mental health, not that you've cured yourself or anything, but I just feel like you've gotten to a place where you can more often than not create from a regulated place.
Yes, I can.
And
well, I have
it
to.
Is much better.
Yeah,
like,
it's
just
much
having
better.
Seen you try and create from a dysregulated place, I really do think that you are better off not coming to the page being terrified.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree.
And you were terrified for
years. Yeah, I was scared. I was very, very scared.
And you know what? We have such rich imaginations. Like, you could just imagine shit. You just...
Why are you saying that? But,
I mean, like... People go, oh, if I get rid of all my pain, then what am I going to write? What am I going to do? But I'm so, just pretend? You can pretend. You can do
make
research.
Up something else.
I mean, of course, I don't think you should necessarily. And I don't know where I said on this, but of course, I don't know if you should necessarily be really in depth making art about a lived experience that you really don't know anything about or haven't experienced. But you know, you can. If you're not regularly sad, you could probably still remember what it was like to be sad and write about that, or make
of
music
course.
That's like that, or. You could probably still
we
remember your breakups.
We have such a huge spectrum of like our lived experience, and it's always with us.
Yeah, exactly. You'll remember those things. You have memory. It's like what I try and say to people who spend their whole holidays taking photos and videos. You have photos in your head. It's called a brain. It's called memory.
You sound like a loser.
This is my most boomer trait.
I was about to say
again,
boomer, but then I was like, don't say that.
We just talked about nothing against the boomer generation, but this is something that many boomers do say is they get annoyed at everyone taking photos when they're on holidays. I think I've already ranted about this on the podcast. Totally agree. You know what? You'll probably remember that moment more if you just experienced it.
Thanks for that, James.
And just, you know, you don't have to document all your pain into art at the time, you'll remember it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
You will remember
it. It's cellular. It's within us.
I'm sorry, are you so good at working through your trauma that if you get to a better place that you're like, it'll all be gone?
Yeah.
I just don't think anyone ever really...
No,
really
I agree. Like, I can, you know, sit with my 26-year-old self who's just in so much pain. I can be with her. I'm with her on the pages of the journal. Like, I feel like I'm taking care of her from the future.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm so hot.
Are you?
Yeah. We're a Patagonia advertisement. If you're... I don't know if we'll put the video
Patty
up,
G,
but if you
Patty
did,
G.
Well, Amy's wearing both my... I'm wearing a Patagonia jacket and Amy's wearing my Patagonia...
Gilet.
So...
Sponsor us.
Sponsor us, Patagonia. Will okay. there be an ad? Will there have been an ad? I don't know.
Oh, there could have been an ad. Maybe. A YouTube ad.
A YouTube ad.
There might have been a YouTube ad.
Yeah. Watch Amy on YouTube. I'll put the link in the show notes.
Nice. All right. Thanks for the conversation, James. I think it was really interesting and we got to put a bit of nuance into that very unnuanced situation.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about it more later when I'm not so hot.
Ditto, baby.
Great. Okay, you're going to push stop on the thing. I'm going to push stop here.
Okay. All right. Three, okay. I can do it. Two, one.